Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Hello, I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and welcome to The Game, the official Kiss of Death podcast. Sorry, Lucas, and sorry, Brucey. This week, I'm joined by Matt Hughes, Ben Smith, and Julien Laurens, who, as you probably have gathered by his exotic-sounding name, is French. Later on, we'll be pondering which side will knock England out of Euro 2012. No, don't worry, I didn't actually write this. Chris, the producer, did. I'm not that cynical. I think you can win Euro 2012. We'll also be looking at the changes in the Northeast, but first, let's kick off with the Premier League. And let's start in the Northeast, Newcastle and Chelsea. Now, I'm going to give anybody to come out and a chance to come out and argue that David Luiz should not have been sent off. No, nobody want to argue that? Great. So, Hughesy, I want to hear from you. Mike Dean made a mistake, and afterwards he admitted his mistake. Is this one of those rare situations where we praise referees for their honesty or criticize them for their incompetence?
Well, a bit of both, really. It's not a zero-sum game. He was wrong to make the decision in the first place, but he deserves credit for admitting it. And I think you're right, more officials should be given the opportunity to speak to the media afterwards and to be honest.
Did it change the game?
Right, it happened after so early in the game. Yeah, of course it did. It's a different contest with 10v11, isn't it? Newcastle actually did pretty well, and unfortunately lose 3-0. I think, given they hit the bar twice and were really in it until Chelsea scored two late goals. So 10 against 11, it's a completely different contest.
Ben Villas-Boas said that they were due some good fortune after all the bad fortune with officiating decisions that befell them. That makes sense to you?
There's always the luck evens itself out over the season argument.
And although maybe, statistically, it's been proven so many times that it doesn't.
I know. Chelsea, I suppose you could argue, are due in some sense. But in another sense, I think they probably deserve this. They made them, having survived that lucky escape with Luiz, they went on to dominate. And, although Demba Ba hit the bar on the post, I think they were well worth their victory.
Julien, you on board with that?
I'm not sure about that one. No, I think obviously the right to feel robbed by the referee's mistake, obviously. And then I just like the way they played Newcastle. I think, they've played City, United and Chelsea in a row, got on 1 point out of 9, but they showed some...
And that was with a dodgy penalty, too.
Yeah, it was. So maybe the luck they didn't have, or the right decision they didn't have at the weekend, was making up for the one they got Old Trafford. But I like the way they played. I think they would have deserved a draw, definitely, with the way they played and the way they troubled Chelsea.
Hughesy, Andre Villas-Boas came out and said that David Luiz will be the best player in the world in 2 years' time. Now, it's not uncommon when a player is under pressure that his manager comes out and praises him lavishly. We've followed him since his arrival. I know we can all see that he's got the tools and whatever else. Can you enlighten us as to what the problem is and whether AVB's prophecy will come to pass?
Well, he's been in England a year now, hasn't he? 10 months, and he hasn't got any better. He's as exciting on the ball and as talented as he ever was, but he doesn't seem to have grasped the basics of defending, which are positional awareness, making judicious challenges, knowing when to step up and when to step back, and playing with your teammates. He seems to sort of play on his own, which isn't the actions of a world-class player, certainly not a world-class defender. And I can't really see him developing in the way that Berthold claims. I think he was just standing by his man, as he has to, given his fallout of his other Brazilian centre-back. He has no choice, really, does he?
Staying with Chelsea, this Alex Nicholas Anelka business, Julian, I want to get your take first. Okay. Obviously, you have too many players, and obviously Alex isn't particularly good and you don't like him, so you want to sell him, fine. And obviously, you should have sold Anelka in the summer. You didn't do it. You gave this guy more millions for without ever really using him. That's fine. But why do you have to come out and announce it, and why do you have to make them go and train separately? Did they do something wrong?
No, they didn't. And do you know what? The worst thing is, in the summer, Anelka wanted an interview with Villas-Boas because he wanted to know, you know, if he was counting on him or if he was planning to play him or not. He never came. Villas-Boas never went to speak to him and say, okay.
Didn't he see him every day in training?
Yeah, but he wanted a proper private chat to see, right. Okay, what do you expect from me? Are you going to play me or do you want me to go? And that never happened. And Anelka was like, well, okay, if he doesn't say anything to me, then maybe because he's going to play me. In the end, he never played him and I put him with the reserves. I think this is really rude from Villas-Boas. I don't really get it, to be fair.
Well, my understanding is also that they had at least one offer from MLS, which Anelka would have strongly considered, but that was then killed because Chelsea wanted a transfer fee, which MLS obviously weren't going to pay. Matt, does this tally with your information?
Yeah, I think it's a very strange way to handle things. Since he arrived with Boas, partly because of his age, partly because he's relatively inexperienced, has made a big point of being aloof and kind of playing the harmon, if you like, sending two senior players, two pretty popular players, who haven't done anything wrong, haven't been insubordinate, haven't done a Tevez, haven't been professional, sending them to train them with the reserves just because they've asked to leave, even they've not played all season, just seems really bizarre. And it's going to be interesting if he continues to carry on his approach the rest of the season. Frank Lampard had a bit of a hissy fit on Saturday when he was taken off.
Yeah, what exactly happened?
Is Villas-Boas going to ostracise him? It's a very dangerous tactic to be so authoritarian so early, particularly when results aren't going well, because you're kind of asking for a revolt.
Can you fill us in on what happened with Frank?
Well, he was just taken off, and you probably saw it yourself on Match of the Day. He was clearly not very happy, sort of putting eyes to the skies, and then he came back and sat on the bench and just looked absolutely...
Okay, but I just want to be clear on this, Hughes, because I think this body language thing is completely overplayed. I think we in the media are guilty of it. So I just want to ask you, is it just because the Match of the Day producers found footage of Frank looking unhappy and said, look, he's throwing a hissy fit? Or do we have any other indication that he really is angry and throwing hissy fits and not happy with ABB?
Well, the thing about Frank is he's not happy when he's not playing, but... obviously the manager has the right to make whatever decisions he makes, but his reaction is not that of a happy, respectful individual.
Gotcha. It's the Balotelli school of reaction, you might call it. What we should also praise, I think, Daniel Sturridge. Ben, I just wanted to wrap this up with you. Chelsea, we've got this unusual situation, I think, with the strikers, right? Because you got one striker who literally never, ever plays, but comes on and scores. You've got another striker who is 18 and possibly the future, but he also never plays. And a few times he does play, plays very badly, and they seem to have forgotten, like, to move him on or loan him out, although I'm supposing he probably will go. We have another striker who's Spanish and wonderful. We have another striker who's Spanish, highly paid, and not so wonderful, and who doesn't get on the pitch, but they're on the hook for him for another 4 years. We have another striker who's French and leaving and training by himself. We have Daniel Sturridge, who's English and scoring a lot of goals, and then we have Drogba. Can you sort out this? I mean, Sturridge, I thought, actually, I'm not a Sturridge guy at all, but I thought he played well. How do you see this panning out? I mean, is Sturridge going to be used as a center forward? Is he still going to be on the... do we learn anything from the fact that Torres has been on the bench? Do we have any inkling what Villa's Boas's medium term plan is.
At the moment, it's hard to see. I mean, this was a situation that should have been dealt with last summer, I think, when Drogba and Anelka, perhaps that was, you know, they should have moved them on then, because at the moment they have an absolute embarrassment of riches in some ways, and in some ways they've got strikers who are, there's too many strikers there for any of them to feel wanted or get enough games or score enough goals. You know, the Torres situation is one that is a bit of an embarrassment to Chelsea at the moment, because they bought this guy, he's clearly a talented, you know, world-class striker, but at the moment they can't afford to give him the games to get his confidence back, and they've reached a point where they've almost given up with him. Drogba, I think, will move on before very long. I wouldn't be surprised if he left in January. If not, he'll obviously leave in the summer. As we know, Anelka's going. Lukaku, as Matt wrote last week, can't go out on loan because of an error made in the Chelsea backroom office where they didn't realise he'd been loaned out too much this season. Kalou, God knows, I mean, he's just there to chip in now and again. And Daniel Sturridge, I think, is the future, and I think in the end will probably play through the middle, but for now we'll just have to make do with you know, coming in and scoring goals, because they don't seem to have a clear plan for how to accommodate all these guys.
Matt, all season long I've blamed this whole mess on the people above Villas-Boas. Should I have been putting some of the blame on Villas-Boas as well, and how do you think Chelsea are going to come out of it?
Well, I think the board and the club have to take ultimate responsibility, but it's clear he hasn't helped himself. I was with him in the summer on their Far East tour, and we kept asking him, you know, what are you going to do in the transfer market? You've got to ship some of these players out, surely. And his response was always, we have great talent. These players are good enough. They can win titles. That has manifestly shown it's the case. And he's admitted as much sooner than we ever thought he would by basically putting a third of the squad up for sale. He should have been far more proactive. And when he was appointed at the end of June, said, look, Anelka, Alex, Drogba, Kalou, Malua, I don't fancy you. Let's get you out and get other players in. Instead, he gave them far too long to sort of prove himself to him in a facile way. He said, you know, you can play the Thai All-Stars in the preseason friendly in Hong Kong and show you're good enough for Chelsea. And what does that prove? It proved absolutely nothing. And he's kind of reaping what he's sown earlier and paying the price for his earlier inaction.
Julian?
Yeah, I'm not convinced yet by Villas-Boas at all on the pitch. I think all the things he does on his bench or in front of his bench during the game just amuse me so much.
Right.
I spent all those movements he does. He's like, so, you know, and sometimes he shows stuff to players when the ball is like far, far away from them. And you just, even the players looking at him, they say, what are you doing? And when I go to Chelsea, and I'm going tomorrow, and I spend like almost half of the game just watching at him. It's so amusing, I think. But on the pitch, I haven't been convinced, and even less in the way he manages his team and his pedagogy towards players, because I think that's been dreadful, like Matt said.
Newcastle, now, Stephen Taylor, huge blow, out for the rest of the season. I think Pardew's entire squad would probably fit in a phone booth, and now he's without him, and Coloccini, of course, also with a knock. We've praised them all along. An interesting situation, because you have an owner, Mike Ashley, who loses a lot of money and doesn't spend that much. He has to go out and buy a defender now, right?
We'll bet on it. I think
we see a lot of Mr. Perch.
I mean, Taylor has been, Coloccini and Taylor have been the bedrock of, you know, Newcastle's success this season. They've been the organisers, they've set them up properly, and losing a pair of them, you know, for however long, Taylor we know is out for a long time, is a massive blow. But I wouldn't expect Ashley to go anywhere near the transfer market in January. I think he, you know, it's all about saving money at the moment at Newcastle. We've seen that time and time again. And I think if Ashley can finish top half Newcastle this season, that will be enough to keep him satisfied. So, you know, no. Don't hold your breath, Newcastle fans.
Moving on to Tottenham and Bolton. Matt, I've been accused of not giving Tottenham much love this season, but... You know, I look at this now. It's in the last 11 games. It's 10 wins. It's one draw. I have to ask myself, are they the second best team in England?
On form, yeah, they are. And if you bear in mind, the two games they lost were against the top two teams in the country in difficult circumstances. The Modric, the start of the season, the Modric saga was rumbling on. He hadn't got Adebayor and Parker in yet. The team he sent to Old Trafford on the for their first game of the season was very weak by Tottenham standards. So you almost have to write those games off. Since then, they've been incredible, and as well as winning games, they're playing great football, scoring loads of goals, and they're sort of front six is as exciting as anyone's, probably bar Man City. So I think at the minute, yeah, they are the second best team in the league.
Do you think if they continue in this vein, let's say they do finish second, they play like this, everybody's happy, could you see a scenario where Harry might say, you know what, screw it, I mean, why do I want to go and take over England when I can stay here and, you know, coach all these wonderful players and have another go at the Champions League?
That is the big question, Redknapp's future. And if Tottenham were sort of slightly more cleared up, they should have committed him to a longer contract earlier. I think the reason they haven't done that is they realise that if England come calling, Harry can't turn it down, despite the fact that he's doing a good job at Spurs and the future looks good for them. You know, he's 64 years old, he lives on the south coast in sandbanks. What would you rather do? Get up and be driven to Chigwell every day by Kevin Bond, or work a few months a year working in England team? You know,
does Kevin Bond get
paid more money for it?
Does Kevin Bond really drive him to work every day?
Well, he does. Although the sort of unspoken secret is that Kevin Bond goes in every day, Harry goes in 2-3 days a week. Bond and John do most of the truck, which I think probably tells you that at Harry's age of life, he would probably prefer a slightly less hands-on job.
See, I had this image of Kevin Bond living above Harry's garage and on Panorama Road, you know, a bit like Fonzie. But, Ben, so I was struck by the team that they played. I mean, at the weekend, sort of 4-4-2, Van der Vaart coming in off the bench. I mean, this is the team that you play at home against bad teams, right? Mm-hmm. In real life, away from home, you put Van der Vaart in there. You have the one guy up. But you still have Parker as the only holding midfielder, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was quite retro in some ways, the Spurs side. But I think the pace they have in wide areas makes them a very difficult proposition away from home. And you know, there'll be a side that can sit back against the best teams, Van der Vaart there and Modric in the centre providing creativity, the pace coming from Adebayor, Bale and Lennon, and they can sit and hit the best teams on the break. I think away from home they could be a real threat later in the season. And as Matt says, they're certainly the second best side in England at the moment. Time will tell whether they can sustain that through the season. I mean, they don't have the distractions that others do, perhaps. We'll see later this week. But I think they could be a real threat as the season goes on.
Julian, do you love Spurs as much as the rest of us do on this pro Spurs podcast?
I think they need a centre half.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, yeah.
In January, because King is injured again. Yeah. You know, Gallas.
Won't Dawson be back at some point?
Well, I wonder. I hope so for him, but no, but and as well, they've been.
And what's wrong with Gallas? Are you being anti French again?
No, anti French. No, anti French. No, with William. But you know, he's 33 now and he's not the youngest, fittest, quickest that he's been before, and I think he's just not good enough. If Spurs wants to win the league or finish in top two, don't think he's good enough, and I don't think Basong is good enough. So I think they would need someone else there. Yeah. And the thing as well, they've been lucky with injuries so far, but if Parker gets injured, they're in big trouble. You know, if Modric gets injured, and they've got no coverage on the wings either for Bale or for Lennon up front. It's okay with, you know,
don't
with
they
the
still have Huddleston?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, do you know what I mean? Today, Parker and Modric are probably the best partnership with Touré and Barry in the Premier League, in the centre of the pitch. If they lose one of them, I think the team won't work as well as it's doing now. So, you know, finger crossed for them. If they keep their best injury, you know, their best players not injured, I think they're going to go really far this season.
So, Matt, I want to get from you on Bolton, because last year we were praising Owen Coyle to high heaven, and this year they've been awful. But I look at it, and I look at four very good players who were there at the end of last year, and Stuart Holden, Chung-Yung Lee, Johan Elmander, and Daniel Sturridge. And I look, and these guys have been sort of, you know, replaced by Ivan Klasnic, by Chris Eagles, by this Matt Davies character, David Ngog, people like that. I mean, is it as simple as that? You lose four very good players, and you replace them with bunch of not so good guys, or is Owen Coyle doing things differently and doing things in a worse way?
I think you're right. I think the former's the case. I think they've got worse players. I was at Spurs Saturday. I looked at the team sheet and you look down the Bolton team and there are a lot of players in there that aren't, in my view, Premier League players. Certainly not.
Come on, name names. Players. Name names.
Well, Rita Kokio bombed at Villa. They were struggling, and now he's gone to Bolton. Chris Eagles has never really fulfilled the potential he had as a youngster. Look at the bench. You've got Ngog, who failed at Liverpool. Gael Kakuta, who did nothing at Chelsea, couldn't get a game at Fulham, and he's now at Bolton. They really do not inspire much confidence. And Owen Coyle has inherited a reasonable team who were struggling, and he stabilised and did well. But I think his moves in the transfer market are where you can really criticise him, because he's not added any value to that squad.
Well, and also Gary Cahill, the £20 million centre half, seems to be getting worse and worse, although we can't really blame him this weekend. We criticised Dean for getting it wrong, then praised him for getting it right. Stuart Atwell sending off Gary Cahill. I mean, even Harry Redknapp, and of course it is easy to be charitable when you spank the opposition. Julian, he came out afterwards and said it was wrong. What was going through his mind? For those who haven't seen this, Cahill is basically out on the sort of right-hand side of midfield. He does this stupid drag back. He loses the ball to Scott Parker, I believe it was. Now, bear in mind, Scott Parker is a wonderful footballer. He is not particularly fast. I would imagine that Cahill could have fallen on his rear end, gotten up, and taken three giant steps and caught up with him.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
But anyway, Parker falls, and it's a red card. It's a last man situation when he's way up the pitch and there's central defenders and whatever else. Again, I'm assuming this is completely wrong, yeah. But
even that night, who was in the center of the pitch, who would have had plenty of time to recover and catch Scott Parker, it was still there. So you can't even argue that the whole thing was almost on the halfway line. It was just ridiculous, and there was no hesitation from the ref. He just didn't think. He just it was red straight, and everybody looked gobsmacked. Even on the benches, obviously the two managers, but even the players were like, "Is that for real or is it just a joke from somewhere?" I think. And last season, Stuart Atwell sent off Gary Cahill as well at Arsenal, maybe.
That's right.
Another polemical choice, polemical decision. And I think either there's something wrong with Stuart Atwell and Bolton and Gary Cahill, or the guy just keeps making mistakes. It was weird. It was a weird one.
Hughesy, when you saw that, were you thinking, right, there must have been something else? Maybe Cahill pulled out, you know, a can of pepper spray or something? Or, I mean, did you have any explanation?
Well, no, we immediately thought it was a poor decision, and as did Harry Redknapp, who's, as you know, the Tottenham press box, he's just stood yards away. He was kind of exasperated and was kind of sympathetic towards Cahill. He just got it wrong, I think. Atwell, you know, it's danger of generalising too much, but like Berth Barr, he's a young guy, he's sometimes trying too hard. We referees make decisions and they get things wrong, we accept that, but on Saturday he made a decision he didn't have to make, you know what I mean? It wasn't right. Like it was a judgment call. He's almost opening up to ridicule by just being too eager, really. And the referee you don't want the referee to be the centre of attention, you know, the old cliche goes, the best referees you don't notice, and we certainly noticed Stuart Atwell on Saturday.
Yeah, not the best weekend for referees across the board in the Premier League, but at least Dean came out and was honest, and hey, maybe Stuart Atwell, you might want to do the same. All right, we're going to have two little tiny micro debates on this week's podcast, and the first one is Euro 2012, and I don't generally like talking about draws myself. I feel a lot like those managers and club officials do, like after the Champions League draw, where, you know, they always smile, like no matter what comes out, and you don't know if they're happy or annoyed. And afterwards, they say, like Capello did, that they're satisfied with the draws, as if they could do anything about it if they weren't satisfied. Hughesy, you're the biggest England fan here, clearly. What'd you make of the draw, especially vis-a-vis England?
Well, I think Capello was pretty honest, really, and his comments afterwards were as candid as you can expect a manager to be. He said he was relieved not to be in Group 2, and he was pretty happy with Ukraine, Sweden and France. What I don't understand, and this is probably slightly selfish, is why we have to go and spend a month in Krakow and then fly 1,000 miles to Donetsk for a game. I just don't understand the rationale for being in Krakow.
Well, Krakow is a lovely city and it's pleasant, and Donetsk, well, you've been there, so you know what that's like.
Yeah, but, you know, we're not going there, the England football team, we're not going there to have a nice time and be good tourists, as David Bernstein, you know, bizarrely claims. They're going there to hopefully win a few football matches. I can't believe there isn't one training pitch in the Ukraine that would be good enough for our gilded footballers.
Last time, you guys all criticized him because he was running a boot camp in South Africa. Now he goes to a relatively nice place, and that's not good enough either.
No, but this is classic FA, and they, you know, one thing you would criticism for him is being too sensitive to sort of media and public criticism. The fact that England were locked up in Rustenburg, frankly, wasn't really relevant. And now they've lurched from one extreme to the other, and they're staying in a swanky hotel off the main square in Krakow that has its own lap dancing club. I don't really see how that's going to help. And just, I think they should have taken the common sense approach of what equal draw was made and facing themselves in the same country where they're going to be playing.
Can I use this as an excuse to blame Alex Horn? Can I just say it's all his fault?
You can say that. I mean, I don't know if he's actually the official FA.
Does he make any decisions?
He's not exactly a powerful chief executive, if that's what you're getting at. But I think it was, to be honest, it was Capello's choice.
I'll play Capello then. I'm sure he's a lot wealthier than Alex Horn anyway. Julian, France, you guys obviously got a lot of stake and you got to go to the playoffs and blah, blah, blah. And we seem to have this fixation that, like, because somebody does badly or indeed embarrasses themselves in the last World Cup the way your country did, and my country too, that it's going to be rubbish again the second time around. And I'm actually a bit counterintuitive. Sometimes you have people who sort of, you know, come from behind, a bit unexpected. I look at France as a tremendous amount of talent in the squad. In fact, I might, and in terms of sheer numbers of good players, in my mind, maybe you're third behind Spain and Germany. Am I being too nice or well?
A little bit. Yeah. First, just to reassure Matt, we've got the same problem. The French went for a camp in Poland, so we'll have to fly as well to because we play twice in Donetsk and once in Kiev. So at the moment, we're still in Poland. So it's like England. We can't see why they can't try to move to Ukraine for the competition. But anyway, then I think you'll be too nice. Yeah, I think the problem we have, we've got good players, but they seems to not be able to play with the national team as well as they play with their club. You see, Ribéry scored again two goals at the weekend with Bayern Munich, and he's rubbish with France. He's just, and same with Najri. The only world class player we've got is Benzema, and he's playing as well with Real Madrid and with France. The others,
Rami's not world class.
No way. Oh no,
he's having a good season for Valencia.
Yeah, but he's having a terrible time with France. Terrible time. Even Blanc the other day said that sometimes he scares him on the pitch, which says a lot. So no, we do have problems with the form of our players with the national team. They doesn't seem to be able to play as well as with their club. And but it's a great draw. I mean, we're gonna hammer
England.
It's a
great
draw. It is. We haven't lost against England since 1982 in a competitive game, and for the last five games we won four, drew one. So there's no worries at all about that poor England team. Without Rooney, you're very average anyway. So we're gonna start by a win. A good 2-0, 3-0 to, have a good goal difference as well. Then just smash Sweden and Ukraine and finish top of the group.
Right.
Easy.
See, Julian thinks he's sort of, winding up the English here, but he doesn't realize that he's actually talking to an Italian, a closet Scot, and a Yorkshireman who really could care less about England.
It's more for the listeners.
Okay, we've had our first managerial change of the season. I'm sure it's very upsetting to the LMA because that there haven't been that many, because, of course, it's the amount of time that we spend talking about the LMA and the valuable things they do is directly proportional to the number of managers who get sacked. Many thought it would be Steve Keen, but it's Steve Bruce. Ben, inevitable, was it? Or should he have stuck with him longer? In the sense that Sunderland weren't really going to go down, were they?
No, I don't think they would have gone down under Bruce, but I think there was a feeling that things had gone beyond a point where they were recoverable this season. And I think Ellis Short is now very much hands-on, making decisions. I think Niall Quinn would have, had it been down to him, Steve Bruce would still be the manager. I think Ellis Short is very forthright and has his own views and was very clear on this, and I think it's been coming, and as soon as Niall Quinn was eased aside, I think this was probably on the cards.
Hughes, you're originally from up north.
How can you be originally from somewhere?
Sorry?
How can you be originally from somewhere? You're either from somewhere or you're not.
I really should know not to mess with a Yorkshireman's pride here. Okay, so Yorkshire is closer to the Stadium of Light than where we are, than Wapping. Do you think Niall Quinn's going to go too now? I mean, he's obviously stepped down from his role as chairman. He's got this traveling ambassador role. From what you can tell, is it the kind of situation where he's going to say, if I'm kind of here and, Martin O'Neill's here and what do I actually do? Maybe time for me to move on to pursue other interests.
I don't really get that sense. I think although Short made the decision to get rid of Bruce, I think Quinn was fairly instrumental in the talks with O'Neill and sort of brought the two parties together. So I don't get any sense that he will be leaving it. Yeah, I agree, it's a pretty bizarre job title he's got. Why Sunderland need an international development director or whatever. I'm not quite sure, but I still think he's involved in the decision-making process and is sort of an invaluable sounding board for Short, who obviously doesn't have much experience of football, and also crucially has no wish to have any public profile. So sort of Quinn is quite a good public face of the club, and I think he'll continue to do that job and do it pretty well.
Julian, it's Martin O'Neill. He was a Sunderland fan as a kid. Here's what I don't understand. If Ellis Short's been sort of saying for the last couple of years that, Sunderland were losing money, they had to cut costs, they had to rationalize things, that's why they sold Bent, they let Asamoah Gyan go, and so on. They're still hemorrhaging money. if you're losing money, why would you go and choose to appoint somebody like Martin O'Neill, who's obviously done, did well at Aston Villa while spending a lot of money and crucially left Aston Villa when the American owner decided no more losing money? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Or are we going to see an O'Neill that's going to work on a shoestring budget?
I think he can. I definitely think he can. I think he took advantage of the fact at Villa that there was money available and why not spending it then? You know, but if he gets to a club where they tell him, look, you have to deal with the squad, and it's quite a good squad, you have to say, you know, they've got some, you know, good players. It's not a bad squad. I think they should do better than they're doing, definitely. They've stopped improving under Brucey. That's why I think he's gone. And I think Martinelli is much, much better manager than Steve Bruce is, especially tactically. I think Bruce has made some horrible choices tactically, you know, this season and a bit last season as well, and should have done better even last season. And yeah, I do believe Martinelli can work with our money, with the players he has now, and I think he can do a good job there.
I mean, it's been a while since Martin O'Neill worked without money. In fact, I might go back and suggest that, say, it was
Wickham.
Yeah, pretty much never. And even at Wickham, I think relative to the position they were in, that, you know, they did have some flexibility there. Is that going to happen? I mean, are we taking this for granted, or is there a possibility that Ellis Short might say, you know what, while I had Steve Bruce there, I didn't want to lose a lot of money, but now Martin O'Neill's here, and, you know, that might change my mind. Yeah, I'm a wealthy hedge fund manager. I can stand to lose some more money. Financial fair play is not a concern for us because we're not in Europe. You know, maybe I do roll the dice. I mean, can we rule that out?
Perhaps we can't rule it out completely, but it would surprise me. I think there'll be £20 million to spend probably January and into the summer. I'd be surprised if there's any more than that. And I think
that's in line. I mean, he had a net spend of in excess of £100 million over 4 years at Villa.
I think we'd be amazed.
Be happy with that.
I think we'd be amazed if we saw any numbers like he had at Villa. I think Julian's right, though. I think he can work on a shoestring budget. I think the qualities he brings as a manager in terms of motivation, in terms of... I think his tactical awareness is better than Bruce, and I think there are qualities there over and above his abilities in the transfer market that make him attractive to Sunderland. Whether he can actually take them to a level where Aston Villa couldn't get to, I think he will be hitting the same brick wall in a few years' time. I think that they can only go to a certain point, and I think in the end we may see a kind of similar situation.
Hughesy, you get the final word on this, and I will tee you up with two questions. One is, do you buy this argument that Martin O'Neill can work wonders on a shoestring? And two, is Martin O'Neill better than Steve Bruce? Or let me amend the second question and tailor it to you. Who would you rather have managing Huddersfield, Steve Bruce or Martin O'Neill?
Well, we had Steve Bruce and sacked him, so I don't think he'd be welcome back. And I think Martin O'Neill's CV proves he is a better manager. But as the chaps have said, he does like to spend money. At Villa, we had the sixth highest budget in the Premier League and finished sixth. So you think that was a par.
He was also, people quote that figure all the time, he was also, at the time he was there, and he also had the third highest net spend in the Premier League.
Yeah, so you think six is a par achievement rather than something to be crowing about, which is sort of how it is remembered, given the way Villa have fared since. But, I mean, said that, I think he is a good manager. He does improve players. He gets the best out of limited players. And I think he'll stabilise situation at Sunderland. I mean, said that, I don't think Bruce would have taken them down, and I feel a bit sorry for him. He lost his best striker last January. He lost Gian in the summer and hasn't really had a chance to replace either of them, so it's no wonder they've struggled.
My two cents is I'm really uneasy about this. I don't think Martin O'Neill plays particularly good football. I don't think he plays particularly effective football. I think he spends a lot of money, and because he speaks in complete sentences and is far more intelligent than the average Premier League manager, we often give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't know if there's any evidence that if you give Martin O'Neill limited resources, he can do well. I think the way forward for Sunderland would have been actually, hey guys, let's have a medium-term plan here. What kind of a club are we going to be? You know, we live in one of the most deprived areas of the country. We have a huge stadium. We're not going to sell it out and sell a bazillion corporate boxes. do we want to break even someday, then maybe the investment that we should be making is in youth. Maybe we should look to a hungry manager from perhaps from the Championship. Sort of the way clubs used to go and promote managers was go and find them the next level down. And I think and this would have been the perfect season to do it, because Sunderland aren't going to, you know, no matter how bad they are, they're not going to go down. So, but hey, they went for Martin O'Neill. They're paying him £2 million a year over three seasons, and I guess it's a deal because Martin O'Neill makes 33% more than Steve Keane, and I think even I would say that he's more than 33% better than Steve Keane. All right, time now for some quick hits. Arsenal pummel Wigan 4-0, and Robin van Persie scores only one goal. Lazy day for him then. Julian, first everybody, especially you, was down on Arsenal. Then they started saying it was a one-man team, especially you. Does this performance suggest to you that maybe there's more to the Gunners than RVP, and should you maybe be eating some humble pie?
Of course, there's more. You know, the new signing is starting hitting proper form like Gervinho, like Arteta, and even Matthew Saka is improving. So, you know, that's good. Van Persie is the only good striker Arsenal have, because Shamak and Park are not, you know, nowhere near him. But there's all other goal scorers in that team, you know, and Walcott will soon be on the score sheet, you know, scoring goals, Gervinho as well, and I expect even Ramsey to score.
And you didn't even mention Oxlade-Chamberlain.
No.
Yakubu scores four goals as Blackburn power past Swansea 4-2. The Yak now has nine goals in nine games, which is three times as many as Everton's top scorer, who I believe is somebody named Velios. Yet Davy Moyes, who I have to admit we love, especially me, let him go for just around £1.5 million in the summer. Ben, how wrong did Moyes get this one?
Moyes got it very wrong, I think. I mean, he allowed Yakubu to go on loan last season, but he was a fourth choice striker at Everton. They just didn't see eye to eye. I think it was as simple as that. But credit to the Yak, he's lost a bit of weight. It was a good move by Steve Keane. I'll give Keane credit for that. And he was fantastic on Saturday.
Keane-o! Manchester City pummel Norwich 5-1. Matt, the record for most goals in a top flight season is held by Aston Villa, who scored 128 back in 1931. City are on pace to break that, and I should add that Villa did that in a 42-game season, whereas we only play 38 these days. The record for most points in the top flight season is held by Chelsea, managed by some guy named Jose Mourinho, who got 95 in 2005. They're on pace to pulverize that too, going as high as 103 points. Is this City team as good as the numbers suggest?
They're as good as the numbers suggest after 14 games, but you don't hand out league titles for 14 games, so we'll have to see if they're as good as they're threatening to be over 38. Listen, City look like a brilliant team, great football, so many options, but we have to see if they can do it at the business end of the season. The one hope for their opponents is that in Champions League, in big games, they've not delivered. So if United, Tottenham, who knows, maybe even Chelsea can stay close to them, then they might be able to put some pressure on at the business end.
I see. So the one hope for their opponents is to transform themselves into Bayern or Napoli.
Gab, one for you. Socrates passed away on Sunday. What do you think he meant to football?
I think Socrates was absolutely huge. I think in the context of that era, you know, sometimes we talk about, well, there'll never be another one like him. I don't think there ever will be another one like him because football has changed. You know, the whole sort of the giant midfielder, 6'4" with a little tiny leg, sort of spraying back heels all over the pitch with the beard and the headband and just being so cool and loping around. And I was just on the pitch. You know, off the pitch, of course, hey, look, a qualified medical doctor, you know, scoring in the World Cup and then getting a doctorate in philosophy and being a Maoist. And just all these levels really, I think, made him a genuine Renaissance man. And I think today, in today's football, a player like him, I don't think would rise to the top or would have to change his game completely to rise to the top. And B, you know, we don't like outspoken players. We don't like players who have political views. We don't like players who are that different unless it's, you know, part of a carefully designed look. That's all we've got for this week, but remember, you can go to thetimes.co.uk for all your news, your gossip, your analysis, the web chats. Mine is on Tuesdays. You can also follow us on Twitter. Till next week, toodaloo.
Hold up. Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.